les eaux brunissoires, au sauna pour perdre du poids. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 300 millions de soviétiques, et moi, et moi, et moi, avec mes manies et mes tics, dans mon petit lit, en plume d'oie. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 50 millions de gens imparfaits, et moi, et moi, et moi, qui regardent Catherine Langer à la télévision chez moi. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 900 millions de crèves la faim, et moi, et moi, et moi, avec mon régime végétarien et tout le whisky que je m'envoie. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 500 millions de Sud-Américains, et moi, et moi, et moi, je suis tout nu dans mon bain avec une fille qui me nettoie. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 50 millions de Vietnamiens, et moi, et moi, et moi, le dimanche à la chasse au lapin, avec mon fusil, je suis le roi. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. 500 milliards de petits martiens, et moi, et moi, et moi, comme un con de parisien, j'attends mon chèque de fin de mois. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie. J'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, c'est la vie.
Good morning, it is 9 o'clock. This is KDVS 90.3. You are with Safikar. This is a public affairs show called Books and Ideas. Today we are reviewing a book called The Philosopher and the Wolf, Lessons from the Wild on Love, Death, Happiness, by Mark Rowlands. The book was originally published in 2009. This book is a story of when a philosopher adopts a wolf. It is also filled with reflections on a variety of subjects. These largely pertain to what it means to be human. Mark Rowlands is currently a philosophy professor at the University of Miami. He works on animal rights, among other things. One day, he sees an advertisement for a wolf cup while he's teaching in University of Alabama. He gets into his car and drives to the address and meets the little wolf for the first time. The wolf has grown up in captivity, so we cannot hunt the way wild wolves get their prey. Therefore, he can no longer live in the wild. He immediately falls in love with the wolf, and he's very fascinated by it. So he takes on the responsibility of raising it and takes the cub home with him for $500. Roland calls the wolf cub Brennan, which in Welsh means king. He was brown and reminded him of a little lion cub. In the book, he sometimes calls Brennan his wolf brother. Later in life, he also names his son Brennan. The philosopher and the wolf spent almost 11 years together from 1990 to end of 2000. During this time, the philosopher closely observes the wolf, trying to figure him out. How he lives, how he might be thinking, how he makes his decision. And he learns many things from observing Brennan, which he claims that during his entire education, he was not able to learn and could not. So the entire book is about a wolf, and we're invited to learn many lessons and stories that emerge from this companionship and the lupine world. Much of the book is the account of what he has learned from Brennan about life, happiness, love, and death. I have been interested in the book in part because I also have a very intelligent animal companion. I've had one for the past 3 years, which I've learned a few things from. I live with 5 cats, my wife, and a tanambar or a goffin cockatoo. He's unique even among cockatoos and is considered among the most intelligent animals. His intelligence level is rated equal to primates. In speech and problem-solving skills, tanambar cockatoos are considered on par with a child around 3 years old. His species is also critically endangered. He is very amazing and he's always full of energy. He displays a full range of emotions. My cockatoo has a brain the size of a walnut, which has to do with the size of his head. However, studies show that their forebrain contains as many neurons as our frontal lobe. They can reason and navigate new situations they encounter. I have learned a lot from him. The idea that we can learn from animals may appear strange, but if you, for instance, look at TED Talks, there are many talks by people who have learned real and substantial lessons about life and humanity through their long-time companionship with horses, dogs, and other animals. So it's not very uncommon. The first chapter is called The Clearing. It begins by claiming that one of the things that defines us as human beings is the stories we tell about ourselves. Some of these are stories that distinguish us from other animals and tell us why we are unique. Roland argues that these stories are told by the ape in us. They have a structure, theme, and content that is recognizably simian. They are confused lies. This is how the author introduces a metaphor which is central to the book and understanding the various chapters. It is the main theme. Once you understand it, you will understand the entire book better. This theme is based on a contrast between the ape and the wolf, the simian and the lupine. He uses this contrast to show us insights into what it means to be a person. There are different ways to map the soul or the self and to describe its activities and tendencies. For instance, in Phaedrus, Plato portrays the soul as a chariot led by 2 horses, one white, one black. The white horse is high-minded and noble, and the black horse is insolent and proud. The goal of the charioteer is to ascend to divine heights, another realm, a more peaceful and happier place, but the black horse poses problems. Roland argues that in each person there is an ape and a wolf, 2 very different characteristics that are not alike. The ape is always in us to a greater or lesser extent. It is always pursuing personal benefits. It's always waiting for the right opportunity to maximize its personal interests. It is always calculating the possibilities and the probabilities. The ape, in relation to others, only wants to know what you can do for him and what he can get out of you. The ape looks at you, but he does not see you. He does not see who you are, and he doesn't care. He sees what you have and how you can be of any use. Therefore, all the relationship that the ape establishes or has are instrumental. The ape wants to know, what can you do for him and how much that's going to cost him? Everything, including relationships, are perceived in terms of cost and benefits. The ape doesn't have friends, but has allies who help him in achieving his goals. The ape is also insolent and proud. The ape sees the world as containing certain resources, and he wants to get as much of these resources as possible. What is sad is that since our relations are instrumental, and the ape wants to squeeze them for what he can get out of them, he also treats his own self in this way, and as an instrument to some other end. So the person who's at the grip of the ape does not have a friendly relationship even with his own self. Happiness for ape, quotation mark, is something that can be measured, weighted, quantified, and calculated. The ape turns everything into numbers. The simian tendency is a cognitive development that took place in apes. It receives its most complete expression in us. The ape is a voice within us, which Rawlins calls the shout of the ape. This is a very loud shout in our contemporary world. There is another voice within us, the voice of the wolf. The wolf teaches us what is most worthy is not a matter of accumulation of costs and benefits. The wolf reminds us that real value cannot be quantified or traded. Those things that are most worthy cannot be turned into numbers or be a matter of making deals with others. The wolf is innocent and straightforward. The wolf is the part of us that wants to be a good person and do the right thing. It tells us that the values of the ape are crass and worthless. It is the part of us which longs for rightness and order, a consistency in our reasonings and beliefs, in our actions and words. According to Rawlins, what is most important is not what your schemes and cleverness luck have brought you, but it is what remains when these things have deserted you. Mark Rawlins argues that the wolf is the most important you. He means that we are not at our best or using our full potential when we're only listening to and hearing the ape. And when we are planning our next move and relentlessly pursuing our personal interests. It is when we put these things aside and recognize that life and happiness is primarily not about these things. We will hear the voice of the wolf when we turn down the voice of the ape. It is what remains. All right. We're going to now have a song. There we go. Thank you. with The Philosopher and the Wolf. Okay, we're back with The Philosopher and the Wolf. Let's see. The wolf is the part of us that the civilization and socialization has not reached. It is, it has not become completely corrupted by the world under the pressure of many roles and responsibilities society imposes on us. Mark Rowlands argues that there is still a free, natural part of our soul and being which is without fear and greed. But we forget about this part, and the howl of the wolf in us is ever decreasing in volume. Many of us have gotten rid of the howl of the wolf in the way we live and plan our lives, and we only listen to the advice and instruction of the ape in us. The wolf is the clearing in the human soul. Mark asks, is the free, honest, and natural voice that was once in us still audible? This voice exists during all of our childhood, the inquisitive, excited, life-loving, and happy voice. Brennan taught Rowlands that deep in his psyche, there's a free part of him, very much like the free spirit of the wolf. Mark Rowlands encourages us to discover and revitalize this voice, or this part of us, so that we can become more alive, happier, and in tune with life. Roland writes in a chapter called Brother Wolf that when he brought Brennan home, within 15 minutes, Brennan made his way under the house and began ripping down air conditioning pipes. Brennan also trashed the house, attacking all the furniture and the carpets. Mark learns fast that Brennan is very destructive. Therefore, the first rule of their relationship is never, ever, under any circumstances, to leave him alone and to take him everywhere. In this way, the philosopher and the wolf become inseparable for 11 years. In this chapter, Roland writes about how he trained Brennan, the similarity and the difference between the wolves and dogs, his justification for keeping and raising Brennan, his developing relationship with the wolf, and their brotherhood. Okay. We have given you some of the conclusion, and here's are the reasonings behind it. How do we justify these characteristics? In chapter 4, called Distinctly and Civilized, Roland argues that wolves have no place in civilized society because they are too honest. He writes that we often assume that apes are more intelligent than wolves. He thinks that this conclusion is not so much false as it is simplistic. What we should be asking is, in what respect? Apes and wolves share what may be called a mechanical intelligence. This is the ability to figure out their surroundings and use it to their advantage and to avoid obstacles. What makes the apes more intelligent and accounts for the increase in their brain size is the demands of social life. Social animals not only need to master the natural world, but they also need to understand the relationships they have with creatures like them. This is social intelligence. Apes traveled an evolutionary path that wolves did not. For apes, living in groups brought new possibilities. The first possibility is manipulating and exploiting your colleagues and so acquiring all the benefits of group living while incurring fewer costs. This capacity is based on the capacity of deception. The primary and the most effective way of manipulating your colleague is by deceiving them. The other possibility is forming alliances with your peers, which is often used to gang up on others. To do this, you need the ability to scheme. It is this deception and scheming that grew the size of the brain and its powers and lie at the core of social intelligence possessed by apes and monkeys. Classical studies on apes also demonstrate this. For whatever reason, wolves did not adopt this strategy. Compared to apes, dogs and wolves are like children. Roland then makes a controversial claim and points to a striking future of humanity. We humans often go from we are different from animals to we are better than them. However, he argues that our scientific and artistic intelligence is a byproduct of our social intelligence, which we got as apes. In other words, our intelligence is built on more primitive abilities to manipulate and deceive our peers and rivals. Roland argues that intelligence is obviously a good thing to have, but it's not an unadulterated blessing. What we regard as our best aspect is derived from what is worse in us. Quotation. Machination and mendacity lie at the core of our superior intelligence, like worms coiled at the core of an apple. Just to be clear, he is not saying that our understanding of our natural world and our intellectual and artistic creativity can be reduced to deception and scheming, but that these came afterwards and as a consequence. We and the ape walked an evolutionary path that wolves did not. Roland argues that there are two reasons for this, sex and violence. The lucky wolf that gets to be the alpha male or female has sex only one or two times a year. Many wolves never have sex. Female wolves are in a reproductive cycle only once a year. The entire cycle lasts around 3 weeks, and the wolf is fertile only during the middle week. In any pack, it is usually only the alpha female who will get into reproductive mode. For the wolf, pleasure is a consequence of the drive to produce. But we apes know all about pleasure. Rollins claims that we have inverted this. The ape employs schemes and deceptions to satisfy this craving. Therefore, apes' capacity for deception were acquired in a different context and for a different reason, namely seeking pleasure and reproductive success. Roland claims that deception and scheming of the ape involves a certain type of malice, but this malice has no echo in the life of the wolves. A wolf will quickly forgive and forget, but the ape is driven by malice afterthought, and it's not so easily mollified. The ape is merciless to its peers in a way that the wolf is not and could never be. Roland ends this chapter with the following conclusion. He notes that historically, we humans have valued two things above all others. These are our intelligence and our moral sense. He grants this, but points out that our intelligence is a superstructure erected on the foundation of violence and a drive to acquire pleasure. Roland argues that since there are also peacemakers among apes who appear to recognize that an attack must have grounds, some apes appear also to embody a sense of justice. We find in apes at least the beginning of this kind of sensitivity. He writes, grounds, evidence, justification, warrant, only a truly nasty animal would have need of these concepts. Okay, that's it for this week. We'll, I'm having a little problem getting my music together. But we'll continue this talk next week. All right. What we don't want is dead air. So, can you come and help me? I'm having a little problem. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to, in the next few minutes, just begin chapter 4. All right. Okay. Okay. All right. I believe now I'm okay.
If you're a UCD undergrad and are having any legal issues, then ASUCD Legal Services may be the solution for you, offering domestic or civil legal assistance. To receive a consultation, all you have to do is take your Aggie card to the Student Services office at 347 Memorial Union. Once there, an appointment will be made for you to speak with a licensed attorney via phone. For more info, please call the Student Services office at
That's a deal.